Wait, what? I don't know about you guys, that guy had filthy stuff. Just filthy. Totally not the move I would have made, but we'll see if it works. Welcome to the Red Sox Report Podcast. Episode 1, we're off and running. I am your host, Jim Young. For those of you who have already been following along on Twitter, at the Sox Report, and also checking out the site, www.theredsoxreport.com. Thank you very much. We're new to the world, so we're kind of finding our way. But hopefully, you guys have liked what's been going on so far, and we can keep it going. As far as this podcast goes, kind of envision this being, you know, complimentary to the columns and the site and the Twitter feed and all that. It's just a place we can go into a little more detail. Hopefully, make it a little more interactive. Although Twitter is about as instantaneous and interactive as you can get. But if there's any topics you guys like covered or questions or anything like that, you can post them on Twitter, again, at the Sox Report on Twitter, or you can email at theredsoxreport@gmail.com as well. So that's the nuts and bolts. Let's get to it. Leading off, today's been a lot of talk the last couple of days, especially amongst people on Twitter, about the Sox rotation. This is really shortstop aside, because I don't think that one's going to have as big an impact as the rotation. This is pretty much the big thing left for them to figure out. And it's been an interesting weekend for the rotation, since everyone who's been in that group of candidates has seemingly pitched, and a lot of them have not pitched well. Savis yesterday got lit up really well by the Phillies. Just everything was up. A lot of his stuff was flat, and he essentially pitched batting practice for about 5 or 6 innings. And then Bard came out today with a chance to put a stranglehold on things, or at least improve his chances in the eyes of Bobby Valentine. And he also did not fare quite as well, going 6 innings, but he did get knocked around a little bit as well. It seems like actually the best people who have looked the best so far, obviously, has been DuBrant, whose numbers overall are good. I've never been a huge DuBrant guy. I thought his stuff was mediocre. He doesn't really have anything in his arsenal that makes you look at it and be like, this guy can go to this pitch when he needs to get an out right here. And even Valentine has said that. He just doesn't see an out pitch. And that's kind of been the thing with him. He's been, I wouldn't even say steady, he's been okay at times while going up and down. He's mostly been good in the minors. But again, it looks like he actually is in the lead, the pole position out of this group, which to me is shocking, because I had him ticketed as a lefty out of the pen due to his lack of options, where they were going to have to do something with him, but I didn't think that something would stash him in the rotation. But it looks like, at least in the early going, that could be where he ends up, and if that's the case and he comes out of the gates in the rotation, whether it's the 4 or 5 spot, I gotta be honest, I will be blown away if he is still in that role come June, July, by the All-Star break at the latest. I know I've seen some people out there that like DuBrant. I just don't see it. I'm, like I said, I don't see this stuff. But we'll see. I've been wrong many times before, and it would surprise me if he stuck. Like I said, just because of what you see with him, he strikes me as kind of like a left-handed Michael Bowden, where he's good enough to get minor league hitters out, but he doesn't have that extra, that one pitch or that extra stuff that's just to get by at the major league level. So we'll see, but that's kind of where I'm at. And Aaron Cook has looked surprisingly well, so I got a feeling if they make the mistake and pull Bard from the rotation, it looks like it might be DuBrant and Cook going forward. But Bard to me is without question the key here. I mean, I completely agree with Peter Abraham of the Globe, where he said that it'd be tough to pull Bard from the rotation since they kind of hitched a wagon to him in this transition coming into the offseason. I agree. I mean, that was their move. That was a big upgrade for the rotation. Everyone knew needed at least one more starter, and then you could fill in the hole. But you had at least had to get someone legit as your four. And this was their answer. This Bard was the guy. They said they were gonna do this move. They announced it early. They made a fairly decent deal of it. It wasn't like they just swept it under the carpet and were like, well, we'll see how it goes. They pretty much like, this guy is going to be our number four. And now we're, you know, reaching the end of spring training. It's only a couple weeks ago. He's pitched, I think, like 18 innings or so, maybe a little bit more than that this spring. And there are already talks of this plan being scrapped, which has he pitched well this spring? No. He's been very inconsistent. Some innings he's looked good, some innings not so much. There's the whole change-up controversy of not today's start, but the last start where he threw one, and Valentine called him out for that. But, I mean, if you're looking short-sighted, yeah, then he probably shouldn't be in rotation coming out of spring. But this was never sold as a short-sighted move. This was supposed to be a move for the long term. And if that's the case, then you just simply can't pull him. And you can't just shift him back to the bullpen and say, oops, it didn't work out. Because, like I said, this is the move that they kind of trumpeted as, this: we're improving our rotation by putting a guy with plus stuff as our number four. So, and there are repercussions out of this, obviously, if you move him back. First off, in the Melanson trade, suddenly takes on a whole nother light. You essentially gave away Jed Lowrie for a guy who, if Bard is back in the eighth inning, is going to be pitching the seventh inning for you. Which, to me, I mean, Lowrie, obviously not an all-star. But, and a lot of health problems, difficulty staying on the field. I understand all that. But he was viable. He was a viable major leaguer. When healthy, he could play shortstop legitimately. You know, would you want him there as a building block for a whole season? You know, maybe not. But he showed last year that, you know, for a week or two, he could carry you offensively, which is something that they don't have at that position right now. And you essentially just gave that away for a seventh inning, you know, sixth or seventh inning guy, if you move Bard back. And then, I mean, there's also the, you know, what's the direction here if Bard gets shifted back this quickly? I mean, we've already seen the organization kind of fail from the top down after September, when they really didn't do anything except for scapegoat Francona and then go off on the most ridiculous, ludicrous managerial search I've ever seen, going through the entire process, getting to the finalist, picking a candidate, and then immediately trashing the entire search, starting over again, and going in a complete 180 of a different direction. And then ending up with Bobby Valentine, who was never a candidate publicly until after that, and then immediately became the guy. So you're kind of following that up with, all right, we've cut the legs out from underneath our GM on the manager search. One of his first big decisions was to switch Bard to the rotation, and now your manager, who your GM didn't necessarily want to hire, is saying, no, I've seen enough. This guy's going back to the pen. It's concerning. It's concerning. And I didn't, if you guys didn't see it yesterday, I tweeted it, that Chris Gasper put out just what I thought was a fascinatingly disturbing article on the power struggle between Cherington and Valentine. And I suggest you read it, because this story's not going away. It's only going to get worse, I think, and become more prevalent. Will it tear the team apart? No, it probably won't in the short term, but I don't think this whole Bobby V thing is going to be a long-term issue. I got a feeling either him or Charrington's going to be gone in the next, definitely before Valentine's contract is up, or at the end. I don't think 2 years of these two is as much as you're going to get. And then you're going to be left with one of them, or who knows, maybe neither of them, if Charrington finds opportunities elsewhere where he doesn't have to deal with Lucchino. But back to the Bard thing. I mean, they're talking now about, well, he doesn't use all his pitches. His command's not good. He's going to throw a bunch of pitches and end up not going deep enough into games, which I understand that, but again, this shouldn't be a surprise. These should be things that they knew about going in. And if you look at Daniel Bard's minor league stats, he only started for the Sox for the first, really like the first year in pro ball, and he made a couple different, jumped a few levels. But, and he had 17 starts at single A in Greenville in 07 after being drafted. And in those 17 starts, he pitched 61 and two-thirds innings, and he walked 56 people. So, not surprising. And then he followed that up by getting called up to Lancaster in the high A level, and he made 5 starts there. He pitched 13 and a third innings, and he walked 22 batters. So, in his first year of pro ball, he pitched 75 innings, and he walked 78 people. So, I mean, the writing was on the wall, and that's why they then went out in 08 and immediately made him a reliever when he then pitched 77 and two-thirds innings and only walked 30 while pitching between Greenville and Double-A Portland. So, and these are the things they knew. And this was the book on Daniel Bard. This is why he became a reliever in the first place. And now, all of a sudden, you're surprised by this, and you're about facing on your essentially your second your biggest offseason move that didn't involve a manager. So that's a little troubling to me. But I mean, then you also have to look at it. If you pull him out, and you go with a Dubron or a Cook or even a Savis, who as we went back and forth with a lot on Twitter during the Sox game yesterday. People seem to fall into two camps with this guy. Either one, they're all for it and they think he can do anything, or two, they think he's a really good reliever who just isn't a very good starter. I absolutely fall on the second one of those categories, because I don't think he can start. I don't think he's nearly as good as a starter. I mean, in limited numbers last year, granted it was, I think, 4 starts, he had an ERA of almost 5.5, but in 51 relief appearances, he managed an ERA of just a shade over 2. I mean, all his numbers across the board as a starter went completely out of whack. His whip was over 1.5. His strikeouts to walk ratio drops. His strikeouts per 9 drops. All his numbers go down noticeably as a starter. And I think a lot of that to do with, I mean, he just doesn't have the stuff to go through a lineup multiple times. He can get through it once, he can get through it maybe twice, but then the third or fourth time, what else are you going to show him? I know people say he has 4 pitches, but they're all kind of similar in trajectory and speed. So, is it that much worse that Bard only goes 5 innings or 6 innings? Because the Savis is never going to go 7 or 8. I mean, that's just not the way he works. So, I mean, there's that to consider, which is always my point on him. I don't base it on spring numbers. I know he was good in the spring early on, but if I'm not mistaken, I don't think he actually started a game until the Phillies game. I think a couple of those came in relief. So I think that, you know, relieving and starting in spring training, six of one, half dozen of another. But still, you know, depending on what time you're getting some more regulars in there, and obviously it makes it a little more telling. But I think for the most part, I mean, spring stats, you kind of throw them out the window. I mean, do we think Scirocco is going to hit 400 or Darnell McDonald is going to hit 500 this season? And there's always ridiculous numbers in the spring. So whether they're good, whether they're bad numbers, they're spring numbers. Everything resets in 2 weeks and it's not going to matter. But I would rather see you strengthen your bullpen, which could need it, as opposed to weakening your bullpen to get what is probably just going to be a middle-of-the-road starter out of it. So, you know, and it's the same, it's the reverse argument for, actually, it's the same argument as they had for Papelbon. You know, where do you want the quality of innings, and would you rather have a lights-out closer, or would you rather have, you know, a middle-of-the-rotation starter? And the Savis doesn't have nearly the stuff that Papelbon does. So, that's where I fall on that move. But, and also, I mean, you don't want to have $190 million payroll, and 40% of your starting rotation are journeymen or converted relievers or like fringe 4A players. I mean, You know, you spend all this money, you basically print money, and granted, they don't always spend it well, but I don't think you should have 40% of your rotation being a mess like this. At least Bard gives you the allure of a higher ceiling, and the possibility of if he figures it out, then yeah, you know, maybe you really got something going there. But the other big thing going on in camp right now is obviously shortstop, and this is becoming more of a tug of war, I think, between front office and Valentine than anything else. And is Iglesias ready? No, I don't. Offensively, he doesn't seem close to ready. Defensively, obviously, yes. And you know, you can get away with it, depending on how bad offensively the guy is. I mean, you can't run someone out there to hit a .120 or something like that. But and is he better than that? At this point, who knows? I mean, he hit like .235 in the minors, so this guy obviously needs some work offensively. And Aviles is hitting well, although I'm so not an Aviles fan. The guy last played, you know, almost half a season at shortstop, and I think it was 2007 or 8 for the Royals that won like 75 games. He played 91 games at shortstop, which was by far his career high. So not excited about him, but again, I put a lot of this on the front office. And you traded Scudero, who I was never a huge supporter of, but he was adequate. And he was established here. He was a starter. There was really no question about it. The thought became, well, if Iglesias is ready mid-season, then Scudero can shift to some kind of a super utility role. And that made sense. But then you dealt Scudero, and your backup plan was Mike Aviles and Nick Punto. So you opened yourself up to this, where there really isn't someone we can be like, there's no way we can rush this kid because we have this guy sitting here already established. So without that, I think you're getting a lot more groundswell for Iglesias. In my preview, I wrote that I thought even if Aviles breaks camp as a shortstop, I don't think it's going to take very long. Valentine seems just enamored with Iglesias. And I think he looks at this more as a chance to kind of flex his muscle and show that he's going to play his guys. And that's the book on Bobby V, is no one tells him who to play. It's his team. He does what he wants. For better or for worse, this is what they signed up for. But it'll be interesting. And you know, I'd be curious to hear what you guys think on this one. So like I said, I know a lot of the thoughts of the Twitter world about the fourth and fifth starters, but this one's been kind of overshadowed this weekend with all the guys pitching over like a 2-day span. So I'd love to hear what you guys think, who's going to be the shortstop, who should be the shortstop going forward. And we'll wrap it up today with some talk on Bobby V, because I have so many thoughts on Valentine, really. Even before he got here, never a huge Bobby Valentine guy. The reputation is baseball genius. You feel like this guy is just an innovator, and there's so many things outside the box, and there's all the nonsense about, you know, the what he does in the community in Stanford, and creating the wrap sandwich and going to USC and all this nonsense. And he was successful in Japan as a manager, but he was less so here. I went into it pretty a lot of it in the column, but I mean, the guy's record is a shade over 500 for his career in the majors. He's never won a division. He's been to one World Series, and they got spanked around by the Yankees. I mean, he's had some decent teams. He also oversaw a similar collapse with the Mets, like the Sox had. With instead of beer and chicken, it was bongs and blunts. And they had a big payroll back then, and they had superstars, and they had talent, and they had all that stuff. And the same thing happened. So going into this, it was very surprising that suddenly everyone was kind of lauding this guy as he's going to turn things around, because it doesn't seem like that's the kind of guy he is. So I got a feeling his act is going to wear a little thin here, because what you haven't heard this spring at all, at least I haven't, and guys, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember one player coming out and saying that they like him. All the quotes have been, well, he's different, this camp's different, but there hasn't really been any endorsing of Valentine. And when it comes to the players, it almost seems like he's kind of on the outside, just kind of watching and not really, like, in the mix. And maybe, you know, maybe that's what they wanted, because Tito was obviously so ingrained in the clubhouse with these guys that, you know, this is purposely what they went out and did. But it just, to me, my issue with him is it just, the reputation seems to far outweigh the results. I don't look at him as the answer. I think, again, I don't think there's any way in hell he's here past his 2-year contract. And if things go bad this year in any way like they went last year, then they could be looking for their third manager in 3 years, which is, to me, disappointing. But it's the hand that we're dealt. I mean, you know, but I'm not alone in this. I don't know if you guys saw this. I mentioned quick that Ken Rosenthal of Fox Sports, he every year writes a column about managers in the hot seat, and number one on his list this year was Bobby Valentine. So, you know, I safety numbers, I guess, is what I'm saying, is I'm not the only one who thinks that this could be a very short trip to Boston for Bobby V and his sideshow. But that's what we're going to end it there. We're going to try to keep this podcast short, about 25 minutes. Sometimes it'll go a little longer, depending on what we have to go over. But again, guys, thank you. If you're listening to this, please tell other people who you think would enjoy this. Let's see if we can't get some kind of dialogue going back and forth, and kind of, you know, a nice community of people exchanging ideas and debating them and asking questions and see if we can have some fun with this. Also, obviously, check out the website, theredsoxreport.com, which I will be updating regularly. Twitter, always on Twitter, at the Sox Report. Someone actually had the Red Sox Report on Twitter, even though they haven't posted in like 4 years, so I gotta figure out how to try to get that away from them. But until then, it's the Sox Report. And that's it for this week. The podcast probably going to be weekly, I think, unless something big comes up, then maybe we can have some emergency podcasts midweek. But we're going to try for a week at a time for now. And again, you can email at theredsoxreport@gmail.com. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.